between Israel and Iran benefits Iran in the Arab world. The anti-Israeli sentiment and even the anti-Semitism that unfortunately exists in the Middle East will benefit from Ahmadinejad's comments. Support for the Lebanese Hezbollah during the last war, continued support for Hezbollah. That helps Iran in this Arab street. And so there's reasons for that. When people actually take it literally and think that, oh, this is another Hitler, they're just taking basically a textbook from history and putting it in the 21st century. Just like Iraq is not literally Vietnam, there might be some similarities. Right now we're not living in 1939, and Israel has a nuclear deterrent. It has nuclear weapons, that means it can defend itself against a nuclear attack. And Iranians, religious and secular Iranians alike, are proud of their 2,500-year-old country. They're not going to commit mass suicide to bring some sort of Armageddon to life. And unfortunately, there are people who believe that in this country. Some people close to this administration actually believe that Iran is in a suicidal path to destroy its own nation state. Now, Iran wasn't built the way Iraq was. You know, lines weren't drawn in the sand. The territory of Iran has existed since pre-Islamic times, 2,500 years ago. Iran is a true nation state, and it's a very proud nation state, just as proud of its pre-Islamic traditions as it is as of its Islamic traditions among Muslims. Even if we imagine a radical, crazy fanatic taking hold of a nuclear weapon to destroy Israel, that fanatic wouldn't destroy the third holiest site in Islam, which sits in Jerusalem. So when we have this discussion about nuclear weapons and their utility in warfare, we should be realistic, and we should base our discussion on interests. Reason number four to engage Iran in dialogue. Because we really haven't tried it. I know many people in this administration say, we want diplomacy to work. But if Iran, as President Bush said, but if Iran ever gets the technology or the knowledge to make a nuclear bomb, it'll be World War III. Or people close to the administration who have the ear of the president, people from the American Enterprise Institute, the same think tanks that pushed for war with Iraq, they'll say, well, we need regime change. We can't be happy until we have regime change. The problem with that language is that if a regime wants to survive, it'll go into regime survival mode. That is, you really can't negotiate with somebody who thinks they're about to get killed, who thinks their political system is about to be destroyed somehow through a revolution that orchestrated by the United States or through some sort of fantastic claim, because Iranians are very fearful of covert operations because in the past they've been affected by it. They've been affected by the United States and previously by Britain and Russia. They've been very affected by covert operations, by airstrikes from Saddam Hussein. They're afraid. So whenever we talk about, well, Iran is now arming some people with sophisticated weapons that are targeted at Americans, the question is, are we doing anything to put somebody in a position where they're afraid of their survival? Because as we know, they support the same government we do, and we support implicitly the militias that put that government in place, which are also supported by Iran. Iran is not there just to create chaos. Iran is there for its own interest and for its own survival. And if we can't get that into perspective, we risk creating a self-fulfilling prophecy of diplomacy that's bound to fail. In 2003, shortly after the invasion of Iraq, Iran sent a letter to President Bush. And it said, look, we're willing to talk to you about not supporting anti-Israeli terrorist groups like Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and Hezbollah. So we're going to talk to you about that. And by the way, well, let's talk about the nuclear program, too. The Bush administration not only not listened to that, they ignored the message, but they told the Swiss ambassador, don't pass any more of these messages on. They didn't want to hear it. So when Iran is in regime survival mode and it thinks that it's next, that after American troops get freed up in Iraq, They're going east to Iran. That's a legitimate position to have for a government. It's a legitimate fear based on our position. Reason number five, last reason to stay, to engage with Iran diplomatically. If we don't engage, we will be stuck in Iran. And it doesn't matter if you supported this war or you didn't. You don't want our troops to be there longer than they should, or longer than they have to. Right now, Iraq is more or less of a civil war, depending on how you look at it and what news channel you watch. But if and when the United States goes to war with Iran, our troops not only will be within range of Iranian missiles, that's not a small issue, but more importantly, we won't be able to cede any territory. That is, leaving would mean ceding territory to a military adversary. Such a vast territory, it's a position unprecedented in history. No hundreds of thousands of troops ever just leave for a military adversary to take over territory. Outside of the United States, Iran has the biggest foreign footprint in Iraq, and it's going to stay that way. Because, unlike us, they've been next to Iraq, that region, for millennia. So they're not going anywhere. They can outlast our patience in Iraq. If we went into this war, we certainly didn't go in to stay for decades. And if we go to war with Iran and create a situation where diplomacy is no longer possible, then we are really in a tough situation for many years, if not decades, to come. And our troops will be stuck in the middle. The positive thing is that it doesn't have to be that. That is, while Iran and the United States have been basically enemies, there are enough mutual interests to start discussing how we can work together on stabilizing Iraq, Afghanistan, and having our troops freed up for other commitments around the world. That's not a small issue. 168,000 troops right now are sort of being held hostage by this instability and this lack of certitude about what's going to happen between the United States and Iran. We have to do the responsible thing and think about these issues in a mature way that's based on what's in our interest and what's not, rather than, you know, all this talk about Ahmadinejad is going to blow up the world and you can't negotiate with the devil. That doesn't help anybody. We have seen the North Koreans dismantling their nuclear program. That's a good sign. We all said Kim Jong-un was crazy and he wanted to blow everybody up too. But my hope is that we will think about this more carefully, maturely, bring down the tone a little bit, and really have a discussion on what's in our best interest. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank the State University of California at Bakersfield for inviting me. My special thanks goes to Dr. Gourami who made this meeting possible. I also would like to thank the Honorable Dr. Hirst, Dr. Martinez, and I heard about Global Affair Club and Student Association Incorporated. As you know, the topic under which this debate is supposed to take place is an Iran-America compromise or confrontation. And I have to tell you that the modern logicians and modern historians, they always have problems with dichotomous questions. They categorize them under the fallacy of many questions. Sometimes they directly call them the fallacy of dichotomous questions. Because anytime you use dichotomy, you deprive your listeners from a third or fourth choice. Of course, valid